Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Susan Franson. Susan, it has been quite some time since we've hosted Local Talk together, but it is really nice being here again in the studio with you. I love the work that you and Paul Wearson are doing, reporting on communities all over Central Iowa for Local Talk, which can be heard every Wednesday at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., and it is really worth hearing.
Well, hello, Ursula, and to you, the listener, and thank you. I love to get out into the surrounding counties, but today's show is really going to be fun.
Apparently, we are in for a lot of weather of the warm and sunny kind. Blue skies and sun are predicted for all of next week through Sunday, and temperatures will remain above 50 degrees. On Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it should get above 60 degrees.
All the ice is gone. March appears to be rapidly turning from lion into lamb. Speaking of March, yesterday, March 8th, was International Women's Day.
Yesterday, the Ames Public Library hosted what has become an annual event in Ames, International Women's Day, Make It Happen. The event was hosted and sponsored by a number of local organizations, including the India Cultural Association, the Iowa Resource for International Service, Friends of International Women, YWCA ISU, and Ames, the Assault Care Center Extending Shelter and Support, or ACCESS, and Wheatsfield Co-op, Worldly Goods, and the Ames Public Library. I went to it, and I have to tell you, the Danfoss room in the library was delightfully festive with lots of refreshments, and the whole room was set up with many tables for small discussion groups. Each table was decorated with a tea set and jelly beans. I would say there were about 100 people, and they were invited to discuss women's issues in small groups around tables. It was both men and women. I sat in on one of the tables, and I learned a lot.
Sounds like a very nice event.
It really was, and a number of the leaders agreed to come here this morning to tell us about it. Kim Hope is here from the Iowa Resource for International Services. Welcome.
Hello.
Kim. Hi, Kim. And Andrea Gronau is here from Worldly Goods. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Andrea Mallarino is here from ACCESS. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Jury.
Jury Betachuria.
Actually representing three organizations, the India Cultural Association, Friends of International Women, and YWCA of ISU Ames.
That's right. Good morning, everybody.
So welcome, everybody. All of you helped lead this event. Kim Hope, as the coordinator, would you start off by explaining what International Women's Day is?
Yes. International Women's Day started at the beginning of the 19th century, and it actually started in America, which I didn't even know until yesterday. I thought it started in Europe for some reason, but it did. It started here in this country, which is so surprising since so few people in this country know about International Women's Day. A lot of countries celebrate. They actually get the day off, but in ours, we don't get it off, but we think it's a really important holiday. We think it's a really important day to take time to think about the status of women. And that's what it's all about. For some people, it's just like a mix of Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. But I think for most people, it's a day to really reflect on where we're at and where we need to be. And we still have a long way to go.
It kind of feels like a new holiday, but actually this event has been going on for at least 10 years.
At least Ames, 10 right? years, yep. Actually, Barb Gwiazda wrote to me last night to give me the full history. She said it started at Iowa State in the early 2000s, but they lost their funding and they asked the Ames Public Library to take it over in 2004 or 2002?
Yes, 2004.
Yeah, 2004? Okay, thanks.
Do you know why they started it?
I think that all the departments on campus that originally started it just saw it as a very important day to make sure the students knew about. And I think they would have loved to keep it going, but like I said, I think they lost their funding on campus. But that's okay because the public library took it over and our organizations really support it. And we still get a lot of students from the campus, but we also get a lot of community members as well.
It really was a mixed crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some high school students there as well.
Yeah, there were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. And, you know, like you said, women and men came, people from all ages. So I was really happy.
And what were the goals for the day?
We wanted people to feel like they could reflect on their own life and just think about small things that they can do in their own life to help the status of women and elevate where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Kim, while you have the microphone, can you describe a little bit what the Iowa Resource for International Service is?
Yeah. So IRIS has been around for over 20 years now, and we've been in Ames. for most of that time. And we do cultural and educational exchanges from all over the world to here in Iowa. So we love Iowa. I think most Iowans love Iowa. And a lot of people around the world don't know anything about our state. And so we think we have a lot to share. And so we work with community organizations, government officials, businesses, you name it. And we help create programming for exchange students and also for adult groups from all over the world.
When you say exchange students, are you talking about high school or college?
Yeah, high school. Yeah, we work with the Youth Exchange and Study Program, which is a State Department funded scholarship program. So it's a really different program than a lot of exchange organizations. And we're really proud of our students.
I think there was an exchange student there yesterday, and we actually hear from her later in the program.
Yep.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're starting off today's show by honoring International Women's Day, which was yesterday, March 8th. And in Ames, there's been a tradition of more than 10 years on this day, an event called International Women's Day, Make It Happen, an opportunity for sincere sharing and discussion with our neighbors, which I really enjoyed. And many of the people that spoke to each other had never met before, so it was really an opportunity to talk to some new people in town.
Yeah.
Very enjoyable. We had a number of organizations with us there, and I really appreciate all of your willingness here to come to join us this morning, talk about what happened, and share some of the ideas that were generated. You folks here helped lead the event, and then you collected some of the ideas. What were you planning to do with the information that you collected?
I think that it was just really important that people had it in their brain, like, okay, now I'm walking away with something. But we were able to collect a lot of tweets for Twitter. This year, the theme was Make It Happen, but it was actually hashtag Make It Happen. And so all over the world, people were tweeting what they can do to make it happen, meaning what can they do to see the changes that they want for our world. And the Twitter account is, the handle is Ames_IWD. And so today I'm going to get the rest of them up. I got a few up last night, but we took pictures of everybody's tweets, and there were some really inspirational tweets that people committed to in their own life. I did one. I was at Andrea's table for Worldly Goods, and we talked about fair trade, and mine was that I really want to make sure that I'm only eating and purchasing ethically sourced chocolate. I learned about fair trade, and I was reminded that there's a lot of slave labor in the chocolate industry, and so it's really important to know where your goods are coming from, and they usually end up supporting women. So,
yeah. Andrea Mallarino is here from Access. Andrea, would you share with us what happened at your table and some of your impressions of the day?
Absolutely. So at my table, as a representative of Access, we chatted about violence against women. And the event was really nice. And one thing that we saw was violence against women is really deeply rooted in all societies. Systematic, you know, dehumanization of women is what allows violence against women to persist in our society.
Did you find that the people at your table were able to speak about this topic easily? It's a hard topic.
It is a hard topic, and we definitely made sure to say, you know, if you would like to share something from your past, you know, whether it's someone you know or some of your own history, you know, share what you'd like. Don't feel like you have to, because that can be really triggering. And there were some people that shared some very hard stories, but, you know, really inspiring stories, and either about themselves or about people around them. And it was really inspirational. And then we talked about ways that we can combat that violence against women, whether it's demanding respect, standing up if someone says a rape joke, or you think that someone might be having trouble at home, their spouse, you know, just saying, hey, is everything okay?
Were there any aha moments or a sense of really discovering something?
Yeah, there were definitely some of those moments, and that's always beautiful to see.
Can you describe one?
Well, one woman had actually received services, and she was willing to share that. And other people around her really kind of had an aha, like, wow, you know, you've been through that, and that's real. And that's when someone else said, you know, I know someone who's gone through that. And then someone else said, you know, that's something that's happened to someone I know. And it just kind of made it so real about how prevalent violence against women really is.
Mm-hmm. Can you say a word about Access while you have the microphone?
Sure. So Access is an agency that provides services to victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, and that also includes stalking work harassment and things like that. So we really provide wraparound services for victims, whether that's just having someone to talk to. We provide one-on-one counseling. We have a 24-hour crisis line. We also help them get connected with law enforcement if they're choosing to take that route. 90% of sexual assault victims do not actually end up reporting because of many factors, lots of barriers, and it also might not be what's best for them. But we do that. We do a lot of outreach, and we also have our shelter. We've really been working on a rapid rehousing system that we're using, and we're seeing a lot of good come from that.
And the crisis line number?
Our sexual assault crisis line is 515-292-5378, so 29-ALERT. And our domestic violence crisis line is 515-292-0519.
And we'll post those numbers as well on the website afterwards when we post the show on khoifm.org.
Thank you.
Andrea Grunow, you're here from Worldly Goods, and you were also one of the coordinators and leaders of the event. Tell us what happened at your table.
Well, as Kim alluded to, we spoke about fair trade, as it's very much a passion for Worldly Goods and their volunteers. We talked about all aspects of fair trade and just being aware of where your items are sourced.
How does fair trade connect to women?
Over 70% of the artisans in fair trade are women, according to the Fair Trade Federation. Studies show that if you allow women to make the financial choices within their family, it supports the entire community, not just the one family. So most of our fair trade artisans we are representing are women, and they're uplifting women around the world.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's women that are really providing most of the fair trade products?
Well, because they are the social group around the world that need the most uplifting. And fair trade was really started to uplift the impoverished groups around the world.
This is really about women and poverty.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do have men, and we don't want to discount the men artisans that are featured in our store.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely a majority of them are women.
So were there any conclusions that came out of this discussion?
Well, again, Kim alluded to that she's going to be more aware of where she sources her chocolate. And actually, we had a Worldly Goods volunteer at the table as well. And it was nice to have her perspective of why she's volunteering and supporting fair trade. We also had a gentleman at our table who was very conscious of where he was purchasing his items. And also, we spoke about feminism and what that means and that we shouldn't be afraid of that word, but we should embrace it.
So tell us a little bit about the store.
Ah, yes. We love Worldly Goods. You come in and we represent over 50 different countries, including the United States, in our store.
Mm-hmm.
All of our items are sourced fair trade, meaning that the artisan who made it received a living wage, safe working conditions with no child or forced labor, such as the cocoa and coffee fields, where many children can't go to school. They have to work in the fields every day because their parents can't afford to send them. And we have volunteers that give of their time to support the store. So you can come in anytime and visit with one of our volunteers and find out why they support fair trade.
And you're located?
223 Main Street.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you,
and
Ursula.
Jerry, you're sitting there at the end of the table.
Yes.
And
yes.
You also were one of the organizers and coordinators, and you brought some of the tea sets, right?
Yes, I did.
Very beautiful
tea
sets. I
love tea sets because I love having afternoon tea. I just call my friends and I say, let's have our vitamin D, meaning let's go out in the sun in the patio and have a cup of tea. And so I love that, doing that. And so I have a kind of a craziness about tea sets, different tea sets.
The tea sets were beautiful. I like them so much. I took a picture of one of them. So I'm going to put that on the website today.
Oh, great. Yeah. It was really nice. Yeah.
So tell us about your table.
Our table, we were actually very fortunate. We have people from different places. We had someone from Bulgaria, someone from Russia, someone from Peru, and from U.S. and from India and from Japan. So we really had a chance to talk about how it is celebrated in different places. For example, Russia has declared day as a national holiday, and they really pampered women, and they discuss political things as well. But more than political, there is a tradition of giving flowers and chocolates. And then this Russian lady, her name is Irina Kirshinova, I think. Forgive me if you're hearing and I can't say your last name. And she actually brought that tradition here. And where she works at the school, she brings every year, she brings the flowers for everybody, all the women. And this year she brought chocolate. And then Bulgaria doesn't have a holiday, but they also, it's like a Mother's Day and Valentine's Day combined for them. In our table, we talked about this year's International Women's Day theme in general is the hashtag Make It Happen. But UN has their own theme every year. It's different. So this year, the United Nations theme is Empowering Women, Empowering Humanity, Picture It. So we thought that that is so important. And that theme actually came from the 1995 Beijing International Women's Day celebration, where it was a huge celebration. Hillary Clinton was the main speaker there, and it was really a very big program there. And so we thought that it is very interesting the way the phrase is empowering women, empowering humanity. And we thought, where would humanity be if not for the women in our lives, in our homes? So basically, empowering women and empowering humanity actually starts in every household. We were talking about who empowered us as an individual. Did anybody? And we talked about how women in the past, in the world and United States, empowered us. For example, Kim just talked about International Women's Day starting here. Chicago textile industry women workers, they had a strike, and that's how it all started. So it is empowering to us that long back. For example, the wipers that we use in our cars was invented by a woman.
The windshield wipers?
The windshield wipers. Her name is Mary Anderson. She had, found trouble driving for her children home to school, and she's like, let's do something about it. So all it's about make it happen. Mm-hmm. So we have this, all these powerful women that have made it happen. Mm-hmm. So for where we are today, women are past who have made things happen uh-huh. for us to have the freedom and the privileges which we should have had to start with, but we didn't, mm-hmm. but we have it now.
Thank you. We're talking about International Women's Day, Make It Happen, an event that was yesterday at the Ames Public Library for International Women's Day, March 8th. And really the beauty of the event was the many different types of thoughts and ideas that people shared. And a few people spoke to me at the end of the event on record into the tape recorder. And so I wanted to share some of what they said. First, Stacey Brown called for International Women's Day to become a national holiday in the United States. Let's listen to
that. International Women's Day started, I believe, in 1907 in the U.S. and then was kind of taken up in 1908 in Europe. You know, there's a number of countries around the world where it's a national holiday. And even though it started in the U.S. and, you know, traces its roots back to the United States, people here don't even really know that it exists. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about why that might be, and people don't think it's a priority. It's something that happens in the rest of the world, but we don't need to make it a priority here. And our government hasn't recognized it. So, you know, people just don't know about it. It isn't a priority, you know, because women's issues, you know, are kind of not a big deal, you know, especially in, you know, of course, that's a generalization, so it's not totally true. But, you know, it would be awesome if International Women's Day was a national holiday in the U.S. So why isn't it a national holiday? I saw something on the internet this morning that said when it's International Women's Day, like the searches for International Men's Day goes like way up. And, you know, so people don't understand why there even needs to be an International Women's Day. And, oh, why isn't there an International Men's Day?
So what is the justification for an International Women's Day specifically?
For me, if you even look at this year's theme of Make It Happen, it's up to all of us to help reach for gender equality. And I think that just because of that, women don't have equal rights, that there needs to be an International Women's Day. Yeah, for gender equality.
That was Stacey Brown talking about International Women's Day. And next I learned something new about life on the other side of the Iron Curtain during the Cold War. Katerina Kazakova gave the socialist point of view on women's issue in this next recording.
My name is Katerina Kozakova. In our table, we were three Bulgarians and two Slovakians from Eastern Europe. And we kind of agreed that the socialistic era in our countries was better for women's rights than it's nowadays. And one of the reasons, or maybe the main reason for that, is the economical issues in our countries right now. I think when older generation remembers things about that period of time, they might see it maybe better than it was. Even my mom would agree that she didn't experience any discrimination. That I think that it's not just black and white. During socialism, everything was going pretty well for women, and now it's not. That a lot of issues were kind of hidden under the surface. It's just that now issues are more obvious. Maybe you can see them more. Sometimes, for example, domestic violence, it was more private and in families, more hidden. It's similar like the issue is now. Mm-hmm. It wasn't talked about.
Katerina went on to give me a very charming account, actually, of what happened when socialism came to an end. She was at the university at the time, and a lot of Westerners came to the university to lecture and to hold classes in her country, and a lot of them were evangelizing feminists, talking to them about how they needed to end the patriarchy in their country, and that she kind of described it as a head-scratcher, like a lot of people didn't feel that they really agreed with what the Westerners were saying and didn't really feel that the Westerners understood what was happening in the communist country. So it was very interesting. The recording was a very noisy room, and so the recording wasn't good enough for me to share here, but it was just a really interesting account of a cultural clash. Anyway, the last clip I want to share with you is Jude Amos. Jude is an exchange student. She lives with you, Kim? Is
yeah,
that right?
I'm her host mom, yep.
Okay, and she's a Palestinian exchange student. And she offered her point of view as a young woman in her culture.
My name is Jude Amos. I'm from Palestine. As a young woman in Palestine, I would say one of the big things that affect me and other people my age is catcalling in the streets. When I'm out with my friends and guy says something or does something, it really, really bothers me, where I get uncomfortable and I feel like he's crossed a line of personal space, verbally, like he's gotten inside your personal bubble and he said something that makes you feel uncomfortable or did something that you feel like I shouldn't be out here or that I'm not allowed to be here. As a human, no one should feel this. Like, this is your country, this is your neighborhood, this is your city, and you need to, like, this is also a form of freedom that you need to have as a young woman who's, like, learning and going through her life. But I feel that we should teach men to not catcall or sexually harass in the street, and we should teach guys that catcalling is a form of sexual harassment that really affects your self-esteem as a young woman. I feel that in order to do that, families have to talk about this, teach their sons to not catcall rather than teach their girls to not wear this or that, for example. They should also teach their school education. What they do right now is they teach women to either dress properly or not do things. Catcalling and calling women out in the street is a form of sexual harassment that can affect us deeply. Sometimes it can really cross so many lines.
Yes, catcalling. That was Palestinian student Jude Amos. Thank you, Jude, for sharing that. And any last thoughts from any of you about the event you want to take away from this?
Well, I do want to add that International Women's Day, this was the 107th year, so we have a long way to go. We've been going, but we have a long way to go. And events like ours, which will continue next year, it's a great way to come in and celebrate women and learn more.
This event will be happening next March 8th, again, at the library, presumably.
I just quickly want to say that, because you said that I was representing ICA and FIW and YWCA, and FIW and YWCA specifically has been involved in the International Women's Day from the very beginning, from the 2004, especially the two groups in FIW and Yahil always made, from the afternoon group, always made display, and Barbara Gueseda has been always like the core person there to organize and facilitate all the activities.
Thank you so much, all of you, for coming. We've been speaking about International Women's Day, Make It Happen, which has been held for 10 years. And thank you for coming and sharing some of the thoughts that were expressed yesterday.
To breed or not to breed. To breed or not to breed. That is the question. Ladies, ladies, they say the greatest thing you'll do in life is become a mother. Your boys and your girls, they come before all others. When old age and sickness creep up on you, they'll see you through your troubles. But your children cannot shield you from your destiny and struggles. To breed or not to breed. To breed or not to breed. That is the question. Ladies. Ladies. They say your dreams on hold because your clock is ticking. Grab a man, get knocked up right quick, or you'll have slim pickings. You're not a woman unless you have children, two or three or more. But we have a monthly cycle, ladies, that says that view's a lure. To breed or not to breed. To breed or not to breed. Is the question. Ladies. Ladies. To breed or not to breed. To love or not to love. Children are cherubs sent from up above. How dare you not want any? How selfish you must be. But birthing them's not easy, and raising them's not free. To breed or not to breed. To breed or not to breed. That is the question. Ladies. Ladies. Many mouths to feed, personalities to juggle. One slips through the cracks from attention lack. His life is plagued by sorrow. The decisions that you make, life, ladies, will affect your little ones. So make sure, in mind, body, and spirit, you're fit to be a mom. To breed or not to breed. To breed or not to breed. Question. Ladies. Ladies.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and so far this morning we've been featuring events from International Women's Day. But now we are coming to Iowa to talk to Ed Fallon, who has been walking the potential Dakota Access Pipeline, which would run diagonally across Iowa and will potentially impact a swath of our listening area.
The potential pipeline.
Potential, and that's why Ed is walking. Ed Fallon, who may be known to our listeners from his weekly hour-long broadcast of the Fallon Forum each Wednesday at 4 p.m., has started a walk and what he's found along the way after just a week of walking. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Yes, how you doing? Well, last week was a rough week. One morning I got up and the wind chill was 17 below zero. And so I took my time about starting to walk that day. I waited till the wind chill got up to zero. So those are rough conditions to walk in. I'm looking forward to this week. It's going to be quite a bit more seasonal. And I mean, a lot of what I'm doing is winding. I'm not following the exact path of where they want to put the pipeline. I'm winding my way north and then west, following mostly gravel roads that crisscross the pathway of the pipeline. I want to meet with landowners along the way and talk to them about why this could be a really bad idea for them.
Well, you've told us what your route was and why you've taken it, but why do it in March? Why didn't you just wait till April?
Well, March is a very important month in the legislative calendar. This week, the state lawmakers who support protecting property rights from private development are introducing a bill on eminent domain that could help in several ways. And I don't know all the details yet. I mean, they're just putting it together. They're going to have a press conference. They haven't announced when that press conference would be that I know of. But March is important because that's the time when people get to weigh in on legislation here in Iowa. I certainly need to weigh in January and February, but a lot of the main action happens in March and April, and so that's why this walk is happening in March and in April, is to coincide with the need to encourage lawmakers to look at ways of protecting people's land from a Texas oil company that really, this oil is doing nothing for Iowa. You know, if you run out of gas, you can't tap into this pipeline and get some gas from it. You know, it's not a public use. If oil being produced in North Dakota, going to Illinois and then down to Texas refineries, and probably most of it's going to be exported overseas. And so there's no public benefit to Iowa. So the question is, why allow a wealthy billionaire from Texas to transport his oil across our state? Is there any public benefit? I mean, if people wanted to sell, if everybody wanted to sell their land to do that, that's one thing. But to come in and condemn land, because there's a lot of people who are not going to want this on their land. I'm meeting a lot of those people already.
This isn't your first go-around with public domain, I believe. I read someplace that when you were in the legislature several years ago that you also had a public domain issue.
Yeah, eminent domain has always been important to me. I've got a strong commitment to respecting, you know, property rights. I'm obviously very concerned about water quality as well and about climate change, and those issues come into this conversation as well. But when I was a lawmaker, I floor managed the eminent domain bill in 2000. I was also very active in the bills in 1999 and 2006 as well. And these are always bills that were bipartisan. There were Democrats and Republicans who agreed that it wasn't right for government to condemn land and turn it over to a private business to develop it. And not only is it wrong, but it often doesn't work out very well. For example, in Burlington, Iowa, in 2006, the city actually, this happened before it could be stopped, in fact. The city came in and condemned a low-income housing development out on Roosevelt Ave, which is a little ways from downtown, because a company from Minneapolis wanted to come in and build a mall. And the city condemned this. It was a very nice it was called the Manor, these little brick apartments that were built way back when. It was condemned. The buildings were torn down. The people were forced to relocate. And then the company in Minneapolis backed out. You know, these things often don't go the way you think they will. And in the case of the pipeline, and again, you know, in addition to concerns about climate change, this might not go very well for you. For example, I know they want to give you a nice cash payout to have the right to come in and put the pipeline through your property, but nobody's property was ever improved by having a pipeline go through it. It's not going to make your property sell any better in the future if you decide to sell it. It's going to, you know, it's hard to say exactly how much, but it's probably going to decline in value. You know, beyond that, pipelines break. You know, they're trying to give people the assurance that, well, this is not going to be a problem. You're not going to have any spills. But you look at the record. You know, go online to a Wikipedia page called, pipeline accidents in the 21st century. Something like that. It records all the pipeline accidents in the U.S. from 2000 on. And it is incredible how long that list is. You know, and it's not just those big pipeline spills that we hear in the news. In Kalamazoo, Michigan, and on the Yellowstone River, you know, down in Arkansas. It's one after the other incidences where pipelines break or spill or some kind of accident happens. And it's not a question of if it's going to happen in Iowa. It's a question of when and where and how often, and could it be on your land? So people need to think about that. And even if your land is not right in the pathway of the pipeline, we all have a stake in Iowa's water quality. And in the question of how the cost is going to be managed, when there is a spill, who's going to pay? Right now, this pipeline company is offering only $250,000 toward cleaning up spills anywhere in the state. Compare that to the $1 billion that has already been spent cleaning up the pipeline spill in Kalamazoo, Michigan. They've already spent $1 billion, and it's not done yet. So that's a question for the public interest. You know, not only do we have to deal with contaminated water, contaminated land, but how are we going to pay for it? Because this pipeline company clearly is not interested in providing enough money to do so. $250,000, again, in one spill in Michigan, already costing over $1 billion.
Well, those are quite a few strong reasons for the potential opposition to the potential pipeline. I think, though, you've sort of outlined what the issues are. I'd like to just let people know that they will be able to talk with you and hear more about what's happened, perhaps specifically on your walk, which incidentally is very interesting to watch on Facebook or on your website, which is fallonforum.com. You can hear who you're meeting, what they're talking about, and where you're staying, and the support that you're getting along the way. But when you are in Ames on March 18th, that is a week from Wednesday, you will be at the Danfoss Room, which we just heard so much about earlier today.
In the library,
but no tea sets. But we could have at least 100 people in there, or we could have up to 100 people in there. And so we do hope that people who are interested in this issue and hear about it now will be coming 7 p.m., the Danfoss Room in the Ames Public Library, March 18th. So we'll be hearing from you then. Anything you'd like to add before we sign off?
No, I'm very, very much looking forward to meeting with people on the 18th and all along the route too. And if people live along the route, I certainly want to talk with them. But anyone is welcome. Anybody who has concerns about this is welcome to come. And I look forward to sharing stories from the people I'm meeting, and again to give people a sense of what options they have and why this is something that we want to stand together to resist.
Well,
and again, I will say this too, there's a great organization forming, and a lot of the activity happens in Ames. The Bakken Resistance Coalition is spearheaded by some pretty well-organized and thoughtful people who make their residence in Ames, and I want to commend them for doing a good job at pulling people together.
Well, thank you for joining us, Ed. This is Ursula Rudenberg, and we appreciate you sharing what's happening, and we look forward to hearing from you.
You're welcome.
And for those of you who are just tuned in, this is Local Talk, and we've been talking about March. First, we started with International Women's Day yesterday, and now we're speaking about Ed Fallon's march across Iowa. He's walking across Iowa during the month of March to trace the pipeline, or the place where the pipeline will occur, if it does occur. And International Women's Day is also International. March is also International Women's Month. And the entire month is actually celebrated. And during this month, there's going to be one perspective on women's lives celebrated in an art exhibition that opens this week. Clara Olson of West Branch, Iowa, will be showing Doily World and other works, which deals with private art with which women have decorated their homes. Susan, you spoke with Clara earlier, and I think we've arranged to have her on the phone.
Yes. Hi, Clara. Are you
yes,
with?
Good morning.
Oh, well, so good to have you with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about doilies.
Well, I was fortunate yesterday to have a chance to see a preview of Doily World and other works, which will be officially open to the public on Tuesday, March 10th. This is an exhibition which begs to have its story told. Could you give our listeners a brief description of what Doily World and other works looks like?
All right, well, Doily World is a series of individual mini quilts, doilies of all sizes and shapes and colors, individually quilted on to either a black cotton or a red cotton, and then displayed kind of like a mural. And it's the culmination of 2 years of working with doilies and looking at doilies. And it's a beautiful gallery. Galleries around is a lovely place for art. So I hope that people walk in and see Doily World and walk around it and look at it, that they will have their perceptions changed.
Clara, for those folks who are of generations where doilies didn't exist so much, just explain what a doily is.
A doily is creation where it can be a piece of fabric and a piece of needlework, which is generally placed on, for example, an armchair or a piece of furniture. And it's usually seen as a protective mat for a hero when a lot of knickknacks, figurines, etc. were placed on furniture. The doily was the mat which protected the furniture. It's a protective covering. It can be 2 inches. It can be 20 inches. It has no particular shape. It could be created through crochet, tatting, through knitting, and it can be handmade or machine-made.
I really hate to interrupt you, but we're having a lot of trouble with our sound that's coming in, and so I'm afraid that our listeners haven't been able to hear everything you've said. So I would like to encourage people to actually see this exhibit for themselves. For starters, they could go to the Gallery in the Round Facebook page, and that will be, then they can see photographs. But you will be here next Sunday.
The artist reception is this coming Sunday.
Yes.
Correct.
At the Unitarian Universalist
Fellowship. At 1015 North Highland, and it will be from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. And please come, and then you'll have the chance to really talk to Clara Olson. And I think that there's a lot to learn. We really can't do justice to this exhibition or to this very, very interesting person in the time and the audio that we have. So, Clara, we look forward to seeing you next Sunday.
Thanks for the welcome, and I welcome everybody to come to see Doily World.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Susan, before we end the show today, I want to hear about your visit to the kindergartners at Mitchell School. Susan Franson went to Kate Mitchell School, and the occasion was Dr. Seuss's birthday, and young people were reading books in honor of Dr. Seuss's birthday, which happened last week. So happy birthday, Dr. Seuss. And this was just a few of his constituents.
Yes, it was Read Across America Day, and they read. And they read themselves. They weren't read to. They read to each other.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
It was really wonderful to watch them reading to each other, too.
So we'll end the day on a little bit of cuteness. Do we have time to hear that? Oh,
yes, we do. Okay. We have just a little bit of it. And so we got a call from the school that they wanted to be recorded. And so here's what it sounds like. Tell me your names.
Amelia. Kesa.
And what are you reading?
Taking Care of Crocodiles. Stuart and Gray are zookeepers. They take care of the crocodiles at the zoo.
Taking care of crocodiles is dangerous work.
Victor and Greg have to be sure to pay attention at all times. Many people visit the zoo to see the crocodiles. They learn a lot about crocodiles by watching them. Greg shows visitors how fast a crocodile can grab food, but he has to be very careful. Crocodiles can move very quickly. If Greg doesn't get out of its way, the crocodiles might think he is food too.
I am Mrs. Mason, and this is my kindergarten class at Cape Mitchell. And there's a variety of readers in my class, but everyone is very excited about what they can learn from books and where those books can take them.
And I am very surprised that kindergartners can already read so well. I've been impressed with all the students who came in. Different groups had different strengths, but I was really impressed with all of them could read most of the words. Some of them could read all of the words. And there were a variety of words.
That's the beauty, I think, of kindergarten is that everybody is at a different level. And they are so excited about learning and reading that they don't really notice what's going on with their peers around them. They just learn at their level and get excited about that. And so that's really fun.
Yeah, I've been telling them that we won't be able to play very many of their readings on the air, but that I can give a recording to you so they could all listen to hear each other. Now, would that be a good idea or not?
No, that would be awesome. And we probably have some ways that we could even make that like a QR code and share that with our parents as well. And so we do a lot with our technology when it comes to sharing with parents right now. So that would be awesome. And it would be great for them to be able to listen to each other read as well.
So this is Community Radio, KHOI on Local Talk, and we've been featuring some of the events of March today, International Women's Day, and also Ed Fallon's march across the state of Iowa along the potential Bakken oil pipeline. And we've been listening. We've had a number of people today in the studios to join us talking about International Women's Day. Kim Hope from Iowa Resource for International Service, Andrea Gronau from Worldly Goods, Andrea Mallarino from Access, and Juri Padacharya from the India Cultural Association, Friends of International Women, and the YWCA of Ames and ISU were all here telling us about International Women's Day. We also heard some of the event participants, and we thank them for sharing their ideas on women's issues, and we want to also thank Mary Logsdon for helping make this broadcast happen.
We also heard from Clara Olson a little bit about her exhibit Doily World and Other Things, and from Ed Fallon about the march, and from Charlene Mason and a couple of kindergartners from Cape Mitchell School.
Our engineer today is Richard Morrison, and the music you heard was Ladies by Angela McKenzie of Renaissance Scale Incorporated in New York City. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, and see listings of our past guests and resource contact information.
You can also find lists of our guests on the website, as Susan said. And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. So if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878. Your participation as audience, as always, is what makes KHOI possible and what makes Local Talk possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.